Okay, Marshall.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Smith, Judge Sleater, and Judge Gaitis, the Honorable Tracy M. Smith presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We are here for our third case on our oral calendar this morning, which is A21-0630 Croy Holdings, I presume. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yes, Your
Honor. Croy Holdings, LLC, Appellant versus City of Newport, Respondent. Counsel, each of you has 15 minutes for your principal arguments. Counsel for Appellant, 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. And if each of you at the start of your principal arguments could please state your name and the party you represent for the record, we appreciate it. And Counsel for Appellant, we are ready for you.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is Robert Bauer, B-A-U-E-R, and I represent the appellant Croy Holdings, LLC. Your Honor, this is a case about doing everything you're supposed to do and then having everything taken away from you. My client in 2014 began due diligence to acquire the property in the city of Newport. It was known as Imperial Campers and then another property adjacent to it. He did his due diligence just like you're supposed to do. He contacted the city planner, told him what he was going to do. He was going to have individual auto dealerships, and he got confirmation vehicle sales was a permitted use on the property. That's at docket 46, paragraph 7, exhibit 6.
Counsel, can I just interrupt for a moment in this explanation? Are you making an argument, and did you make an argument? I didn't see it, that the government is equitably stopped based on its conduct from enforcing its zoning rights.
This brief, I don't believe I did. I may have, in our summary judgment, have argued that there is stop from that.
Okay, but that's not an issue before us on appeal, right?
Not necessarily. I think it can go hand in hand because it goes to whether their findings are arbitrary. Because you look at the standard of review when you revoke a conditional use permit, that is, it's arbitrary and capricious. But my client did everything that he was supposed to do. He obtained building permits. Okay. He had all the inspections approved by the city. Everything was done by the book. He didn't cut any corners. He didn't try to build something without permission. He went and got permission. For over 4 years, the city signed zoning certificates for the Department of Public Safety. And in each one of those certificates, Your Honors, the city, under oath, stated this dealership is permitted conditional use within the above zoning district for the type of business indicated above, and there are no zoning complaints or enforcement actions pending at this time.
Mr. Bauer, can I just jump in? I know one of your arguments is that when we look at whether the activities that were occurring there were permitted under the CUP, we can't go beyond the plain language of the CUP. And I'm just wondering what we should make of the condition in the CUP subject to annual review by the city, how that might relate to your argument here.
Certainly. I'm a city attorney. That's standard in everyone. That always says annual review. No city does an annual review of their conditional use permits. It does say that, but you're not supposed to go beyond the conditions, the language in the CUP. The district court erred in that. The district court looked at the application and what council members or what the city attorney said, well, it was supposed to be for camper sales. That's not what the CUP was issued for. It was issued for retail sales operation. And that's important because under the Upper Minnetonka case, you don't look at an application because a property owner doesn't go look city records. They look at what's recorded, what runs with the land. And that's the CUP runs with the land. But that's to the CUP point. My client did his due diligence and relied on all of them until April 29th, when all of a sudden the city says, we're not going to issue any more of these, and we're going to start investigating things. And it's important, at no time did anyone from the city ever raise any concern regarding the use of the property.
I just want to come back. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Judge Smith.
Can we turn to, because I don't think we're talking about an equitable stop. I appreciate your argument that it's, you know, should be considered in the, on the other end of it. But can we talk about the CUP and your argument that the use is the only thing that one can look at for use? You can't look at, shouldn't look at actual use, but just simply look at the words in the CUP, which was operated retail sales operation. So it wouldn't matter if it was campers or, I don't know, selling couches or doing any other type of retail sales. You're saying it authorized any retail sale of any type whatsoever.
Correct. And that's the Upper Minnetonka Yacht Club case. You can't unilaterally amend the CUP without the consent of both parties.
So if someone had a CUP and was out and they were doing use X that fit within the retail sales operation, they get a CUP. They decide, I'm going to completely change that business and instead I'm going to do retail sales of Y. They get to do that? That's what you're saying under the CUP?
Well, the city under Frank's Nursery has the ability to attach reasonable conditions to any CUP. Okay. The city attached no conditions. Okay. So it did give opportunity to operate retail sales. If what's mildly confusing, Judge, is that on page 9 of the brief, I have a map of the property, and the CUP covers only just a very small portion of the property at issue, and it runs through lot lines, it runs through buildings. I mean, it was not the city's finest hour when they issued it, and it says just retail sales. But I think what's important...
It also says same use. Right. And so I guess back to the question of whether we can go beyond the plain language of the cup. If it's conditioned on the same use, don't we necessarily have to look at some historical information about what that same use is? Especially if, you know, a challenge is coming quite a ways down the road.
Well, and that goes to vehicle sales and what was allowed. And that really gets to the heart of what the district court abused its discretion when it wouldn't allow the emails to be used in depositions and to be used in our summary judgment motion. The two emails were obtained almost a year prior to the lawsuit in response to a government data practice request. Okay. These are admissions against interest of the city, basically saying it is very broad. Everything that you're saying is what the city said in these emails.
But isn't your argument that we should look at the emails contrary to the argument that we can only look at the plain language of the CUP itself?
They both go hand in hand because the city acknowledged in the emails that it's a broad use and they can do what they're doing. Okay. And when you have a government data practice request and you request documents, the city is the one that is supposed to say what is protected or what is public. They release these documents, these emails, almost a year prior to the lawsuit. When Judge Hawley said we had to return or destroy all of the emails, I could not certify that to the court because my client had showed them and had shared them with other third parties. You can't, the genie was out of the bottle. The city had already said this use was allowed. The CUP is quite broad and allows for the use. And that's why they signed the 30 zoning certificates under oath, saying that automobile sales were a permitted lawful use on the property. And again, we go back to retail sales. You know, the city had the opportunity to add any condition it wanted to it. And if you look in context, the city is now saying, and they haven't offered any explanation as to how selling and servicing camper vehicles are materially different from selling or servicing any other type of vehicles. I mean, we had affidavits from people that had worked at Imperial Campers and had worked in the area or been in the area saying they've always sold cars. It's been part of their mantra. I mean, you have fifth wheelers, you have all sorts of vehicles that are sold there, and they have service bays. I mean, for the city to say camper sales are the only lawful use on the property is flat out wrong. I mean, they had retail sales selling stuff for the campers. They had service bays servicing vehicles, campers, motorhomes. Vehicle sales is not defined. So you look to the ordinary meaning and you find that vehicle sales encompasses everything.
Mr. Bauer, can I ask you, it strikes me as I was reading the arguments and the evidence that this judge reviewed, that seems like a prototypical fact issue. One side says there's sales, the other shows the aerial photos showing no sales at a given time. And yet your client, as well as both parties, sought summary judgment. So it sounds like the judge was told by both parties there's no genuine issue material facts. So everybody agreed that whatever evidence the judge had in front of her is what would make the findings as to whether the same use had been violated or not. Am I correct in that understanding?
Yes and no. When we made the argument, the city made as material fact that we represented that there would no vehicle sales occurring on site, or there would not be vehicles on site, and we disputed that. And that's clearly outlined in our briefs to the court, and we argued that to Judge Hawley as well, that if that's to be taken into account, we believe that there were material facts in dispute. We believe that the judge made factual findings that were beyond, to look at snapshots, aerial photos, and saying, well, it's only camper sales. That's making a finding of fact that would be inappropriate at summary judgment. And we're entitled to have the facts reviewed most favorably to my client, and I believe that they were not. But again, the fact that we weren't allowed to use the emails is critical. I mean, the city knew, and if you look at the emails, they're 180 degrees different than what the findings of fact in their decision to revoke the CUP. They knew that vehicle sales had been occurring on site. They signed the 30 zoning certificates. They knew exactly what my client was doing. He didn't hide a thing. He applied for all the building permits. They inspected every building on the property and approved it, issued certificates of occupancy, said, yes, you're allowed to have vehicle sales. Under oath, vehicle sales is a permitted lawful use, and there are no zoning complaints or code enforcement actions. And that's important. There has never been a zoning code enforcement action taken against my client. You know, they talk about complaints. Where are the complaints? Where are the written complaints? There's nothing in the record other than this generic finding, well, we think there's more noise. My client introduced documents and statements from neighbors. None of that made it to the record. I mean, the city hid documents from the council. We supplied all of this information in response at every hearing, and none of it would be produced to the council. It was all kept inside. And in particular,
What does that mean? Can you explain that a little bit more? What evidence exactly was hidden and how was it hidden?
So my clients, every time they would have a public hearing, okay, I would write on behalf of my client and he would obtain statements, or he'd go get from all the neighbors saying they have no complaints with the operations. And none of that ever made it into the record for the city council. They kept their own little packet of history of what they wanted this court to believe. And the reality was, there's never been a zoning complaint against my client, ever.
So is that, I'm sorry to interrupt. So the information that you're talking about that you describe as hidden, is that then not part of the record before us?
We have tried to put it in our summary judgment. We tried to put everything in the record for this court.
Okay.
And for the district court and the court of appeals. We try to get everything in. Notably, I mean, even now the videos of the city council, they've been taken down. Of the council meetings. They're no longer available for the public.
Mr. Bauer, did you ask the district court, did you seek leave to supplement the record with testimony?
We had affidavits that were ignored by the district court. The affidavit saying that campers or that vehicle sales had been occurring on the property for decades, all throughout the use by Imperial Campers. And that was ignored by the district court. The district court made no reference to the zoning certificates that were signed by the city. So we thought we had a good record. We had no one other than their grainy photographs. No one refuted the testimony, the affidavit, saying that Imperial Campers sold cars too. And the district court ignores that. And, you know, again, they signed over 4+ years, they signed these zoning certificates. And I think also it's important to note, you know, the interference. The tortious interference claim is claim that the city didn't know about contracts. They're signing 30 zoning certificates where auto sales are listed. And again, what the city did at the council meeting, the mayor, who is a lawyer, it was saying, we're going to revoke this and you have to leave to the tenants that are in the audience. And on day 61, we're showing up with tow trucks. And then the assistant city administrator is going door to door telling the tenants that they have to leave or they'll be vacated. You can't do that. That's interference with a contract. You can't say that tow trucks are going to be showing up on day 61. I mean, again, they know we have the tenants are in the council chambers listening to the council, listening to the mayor saying, we're going to shut you down and you have to be out of there on day 61. And we mean it. You know, that is a direct interference with a contractual relation. The city knew about it. They knew about the contracts. They saw the tenants in the audience. They knew they were there. So again, we think the court erred as a matter of law. And again, with our taking claim, we have investment-backed expectations. My client spent over $350,000. The city knew that. They approved all the building permits, approved every inspection. They knew exactly what he was putting in for dollars. You have to put that on the building permit application, what you're spending. And you pay the fee based on what you're spending. So the city knew that my client was putting all this money in to operate individual auto dealerships.
Thank you, Mr. Bauer. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. Counsel for respondent.
Good morning, Your Honors. Susan Tindall on behalf of respondent, City of Newport. May it please the court. We are here today asking this court affirm the district court's decision. This is a case where appellant significantly changed the use of the property, which was historically for camper sales, and started a multi-dealer automobile use on the property. The city reviewed the non-conforming use rights and the CUP and found that that change and expansion is a violation and revoked the CUP. In looking at this case, what was noticeably missing from a lot of appellant's brief and Mr. Bauer's argument is the legal analysis that needs to be done here. When we look at the non-conforming use rights, and we're talking about the bigger part of the property and the non-conforming use, appellant failed to meet the burden of showing that they're entitled to the application of the exception for non-conforming use.
Before we go to do that, Ms. Tindall, before we go too far down this road, I just want to interrupt you for a brief discussion about our standard of review. So this case came to us on summary judgment, but the law in zoning cases suggests that the court should be looking at things de novo. And here, so we have a case that came to us on summary judgment that we're looking at de novo, and yet there are new findings or new evidence, rather, that was presented to the district court at the district court's review stage. What is the exact lens that we're supposed to be reviewing all of this through?
Well, and the answer to that is there's a few. With respect to the revocation of the CUP, the court has to give deference to the city council's decision. And the, except in rare cases where there's not a rational basis for that decision, that is the only time it would be overturned. So while we talk about summary judgment standard as a general de novo, the revocation of the CUP is deferential to the city's decision, not necessarily district courts, but the city's decision, and is only overturned if there's not a rational basis or a legally sufficient reason.
How are we to view the facts that were not presented to the city, but were presented to the district court?
Well, I think to clarify that, because we're involving a few different things in the non-conforming use rights and the CUP review on this, frankly, there's no facts that were hidden before the council. I mean, we were talking about six council proceedings that were very lengthy. Your Honors, the last hearing of this was about 3 hours discussing the uses of the property, where the owner of Croy Holdings, as well as his attorneys, were able to speak at these hearings. So where I think some of this confusion is we're talking about a number of claims, both the inverse condemnation, or I'm sorry, both the non-conforming and the CUP. But I mean, I hope I answered the court's question in that. And there wasn't anything laid out either at the summary judgment stage or in the briefing before the Court of Appeals what this alleged evidence was, because the record is clear and there are very lengthy minutes provided to the court explaining the testimony from Corey Holdings, his attorney, as well as the city and neighbors that are very lengthy in that record. And that is at document number 37.
Can I just follow up a little bit your answer to Judge Gaitis's question? Because I too am a bit unsure, because it seems like a multi-layered summary judgment review. So one might, normally we might, from a de novo review, either agree there are no genuine issues of material fact, which naturally, of course, then a city's decision on a cup would be reasonable because the facts as the judge align them. But on the other hand, if we, which we can do de novo, determine, no, there are fact issues, which therefore led to a unreasonable decision, it would still be de novo because we're reviewing the summary judgment of the district court, who was reviewing both the city's decision and all the evidence, perhaps on the non-conforming, all together as one, and granted summary judgment to your client. So am I saying that correctly, that we still primarily are looking de novo as to whether the summary judgment standard is met? That would include the city's decision related to the CUP.
Respectfully, Your Honor, with respect to the CUP, we are looking at whether there's a rational basis for that decision. But I think this can be answered pretty quickly, is that, frankly, there's no material fact dispute. And as the district court pointed out in her order, appellant's attorney agreed that there were no material fact disputes. And I still have not heard what those disputes would be that we'd even be talking about before this court. And, you know, as far as the non-conforming use piece of this, the relevant time period is what was happening at the change in the zoning code in 1994. And the camper sales was happening, and we provide the record of the aerial photographs of that. Now, appellant provided no evidence of what was happening in 1994. There are affidavits or testimony talking about there were car sales on the property, but there are no dates for the car sales. So, for example, Mr. O'Brien, who purchased a Harley-Davidson motorcycle in 2007 or an F-350 in 2015, is irrelevant when we're talking about the use that happened at the time of the adverse zoning change in 1994. So Mr. Bauer's reliance on that testimony is irrelevant, because he has not provided any evidence contrary to the use being for camper sales at the time of that adverse change in 1994.
Can I ask a question, Ms. Tindall? And I don't know if this matters at all, but under the current zoning, MX4, right, the general mixed use district, is the use, well, let me put it this way. If, for example, the district court were to have concluded, if we conclude on de novo review, that in fact the CUP continues to apply, is the use permitted under the current zoning, or is there sort of an element of pre-existing if you had a CUP prior to that 2013 adverse zoning change, you get to continue it even though it wouldn't be a conditional use now? You know what I'm saying?
I think I understand, Your Honor. If the CUP was not revoked, then appellant would operate under that 1986 CUP. But because the CUP language itself has a condition that there's not a change in use, that is why there was a legally sufficient basis for the city to revoke that CUP.
Right. I was just wondering whether the use remains a conditional use under current zoning, but under the 2013. In other words, whether a CUP could issue like it did in 1986. But maybe that doesn't matter. If it continues, it continues, and that's it.
That is correct, Your Honor. And If we then look at the CUP piece of this, the CUP that was granted in 1986 specifically talks about being conditioned on that there was no change in use. Now, appellant argues that the district court was incorrect in relying on the application and the materials provided at the time of that application. And it was proper to do that because of that condition in the conditional use, to look at the circumstances surrounding the application for the CUP. And if we look at this court's decision in MBC Enterprises versus the City of Shakopee, that is a case where the company operated a gravel mine. And the question was whether they substantially or repeatedly violated the conditions of the CUP, which was written in the CUP. Now, the company operated a change in doing a ready mix concrete in that for about an hour and a half. But in looking at this and determining that there was not a substantial or repeated violation, the court had to look at what the use was at the time of the CUP, and there was actually a renewal of the CUP in that case, and looked at the application that was submitted in the CUP as well as the renewal and the plans that were submitted in the CUP in that case. So it is very proper to look at the circumstances surrounding the CUP. And in this case, we have an application that specifically talks about trailer sales and camper sales, as well as minutes that say it's approved for camper sales. So the district court's reliance on the application from the owner at the time to secure trailers for display and storage and sale is very relevant. And appellant has admitted.
Can I just, and this may be backtracking, I'm sorry, just a little bit from your current thought process, but because you started out by saying this is a case about a change of use, and you're for the two different bases, one, the cup with the language, as long as the use is the same, the condition, and then for non-conforming use, as you point out, if it's changed, then that statutorily and common law would you'd lose that protection. But I keep coming back to it strikes me that then the issue becomes a factual one. What was there? What was the use? What is the use? And so part of what Mr. Bauer was pointing out, the city has approved zoning ordinances that seem to imply, at least at a minimum, that the zoning is being complied with, which then would include a legal non-conforming use. Wouldn't this create a picture where a judge needs to hear all the evidence and testimony, and rather than rely on summary judgment to make that conclusion?
Your Honor, the answer is no, because the city provided the court with a record of aerial photos of the use of the property, as well as indication from the website, when we're talking about the non-conforming use, that the use about that time was for camper sales. We have nothing from appellant side that provided any information that there was anything besides camper sales at the time, either on the non-conforming use when we look at the adverse zoning change in 1994, or when we look at a change from the CUP in the 1980s. So we have no evidence to be looked at. The city provided the evidence. And in the city of Delano case that we pointed out in our brief, the aerial photos was enough to support what the use was at the time. If we were looking at the non-conforming use, the adverse zoning change, or at the time the CUP was granted, to determine whether there was a change in that use because of the condition in the CUP. I hope I answered that question, Your Honor, that there is no fact dispute on that, and the court does not need to go there. Frankly, whether or not, when we talk about the non-conforming part of the property, whether we're talking about vehicle sales or automobile sales, is irrelevant when we talk about what happened on the property in 1994. And the record is clear that it was camper sales. And even the definitions that appellant pointed out in their brief about automobile sales, talking about the definition is for gasoline or diesel engine. Camper sales, a pull behind camper or a tent camper doesn't have gasoline attached. And that was the definition that appellant provided, not from the zoning ordinance. And same with vehicle sale. It is a means of conveyance. Well, this is broad, that could encompass anything, but a pull behind trailer wouldn't be included in that definition. But Your Honors, we don't need to get there because what's important is with the use at the time of the adverse zoning change. And the city has supplied the record of what that use was in 1994, as well as that there was, with respect to the CUP, that there was a substantial change in the use of the property from camper sales to a multi-district automobile sales use on the property.
And I'm going to, continue on perhaps on this issue too much about the standard of review, but I was just wondering, so what the district court is looking at when it's doing its review, is it looking whether the record supplied sufficient evidence for the town to make a factual determination, or does it take additional evidence to decide on its own whether, for example, I mean, that use changed, for example, or... So what's a district court doing? And then it helps me understand what we're doing.
Yeah. Yep. So the court gives deference to the city's findings with respect to that revocation of the CUP and gives deference to that. And the standard is whether there is legally sufficient reason. And the only way that can be overturned is if there's not a reasonable basis. The district court found that the city's actions were not arbitrary, capricious, or irrational on that, Your Honor. So with respect to the revocation of the CUP, yes, deference is given to the city council's decision. And in their findings, which are pretty detailed when we look at those February findings, is that the increase of the use had been substantial enough to result in an actual change in the character of the commercial property, both involved in the conditional use permit and the adjoining property, which would be the non-conforming use piece.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Bauer.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think what council and what the findings in the CUP are, again, they're 180 degrees different than what the city was communicating in the emails that the district court said, I can't use. The ones that were made public almost a year prior to the lawsuit. Council says we look at 1994 and we didn't provide any evidence. We did, and the district court ignored it. We had an affidavit sworn testimony that in his affidavit says trucks that are suitable to pull campers and fifth wheels, cars, motorcycles, boats, and four-wheelers had always been sold on the property. That's at docket 46, paragraph 14, exhibit 13. Most campers are automobiles. So we're having the city go down rabbit holes to try to find a reason to try to revoke the CUP. And then I stood in our reply brief, they say their findings are completely arbitrary and capricious and outside of the record. Multiple dealer auto sales is a different use than camper sales. Well, in the reality, why did they sign a 30?
So, Mr. Bauer, just a super basic question. Is it inaccurate to say that at the district court, you conceded there were no issues of material fact?
I would have to say that would be inaccurate sitting here today, because when I see what the court made in its factual findings, they made factual findings that were contrary to what the record had. In our record, we had sworn testimony saying camper sales, it wasn't just camper sales, it was automobiles, things that pull campers, four-wheelers, motorcycles, everything. Okay. All the city offered were grainy photographs, a snapshot in time. We actually had sworn testimony. So in other findings, they say the CUP has a condition that the primary use be camper sales. I challenge that. Where does it say in the CUP that's recorded that it's limited to camper sales? It says retail sales. That's what a third party is entitled to rely on, retail sales. That's what's allowed. They're trying to say that, again, it's camper sales and that's all that you can do. Again, ignoring the testimony, ignoring what we supplied to the council, ignoring the 30 zoning certificates sworn under oath, ignoring that my client complied with every building permit, complied with everything, they knew exactly what was going on, and to say that only camper sales are allowed. Well, then why did you sign 30 zoning certificates? Why did you approve a $350,000 improvement project to allow for these individual dealership offices? You know, from the inception to the date when they stopped issuing, my client Nordstan's conducted any activity that received clear written approval from the city. You know, contrary to the city's negative narrative, the record clearly shows that they had a spotless record. There was no zoning citations. Not a single correspondence from the city or anyone issuing that our site was problematic. Everything changed on that April 29th date, 2019. They suddenly refused to sign zoning certificates and then retroactively changed the rules for my client. Now, again, what is the city's narrative here? And they're going outside of the record to try to paint my client into this decision that it wrongfully conducted business. My client did everything it was supposed to do. It checked with the city first. It confirmed with the city planner that vehicle sales were allowed. It looked at the recorded CUP that says retail sales. It did all the build out. And, again, my client requests what could he have done differently? Okay. He did the due diligence. Okay. He went there. He did exactly what they asked him to do. He obtained the building permits. He obtained all of the required inspections. He didn't hide that he was doing individual dealerships. So what could he have done differently in the process to protect his investment? His investment-backed expectations when he applied for all of these permits, when he sought the approval. My client's an innocent victim here. He did everything that he was required to do. He relied on the record, thought that they were going to include his materials in the record for the council to consider. They were ignored. And again,
Mr. Bauer, those emails... And at the risk, if the presiding judge allows for you the time to answer, I wanted to kind of hone in on that point. I think I'm just going to, based on Ms. Tindall's comments in her briefing, suggest her answer to that is he should have looked at the use pursuant to the zoning ordinance as of 1994, if that's the date, or 96, I can't remember the exact date. Would you agree with that? That the point being is that would be the due diligence we need to do is actually what is the use, so we know what the, and then clarify with the city, am I legally still conforming if, comparing it to that. And then if it is, and they agree, which we don't have in the record, then of course you continue on.
Right. It is in the record. You get a zoning, normally you get a zoning letter from the city, and that's what you got from the city planner, where it encompasses broad uses, including vehicles, automobiles. The city is trying to make that automobiles don't include cars. He did his due diligence. He did receive written confirmation that his proposed use would be allowed. And then he received 30 zoning certificates saying it was permitted and there are no zoning violations. So we thought everything was by the book. And all of a sudden, the city, again, changes its tune. And those emails are clear admissions that they knew that this use was allowed. And it was abuse of discretion not to let those in. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you both. Council, the case is submitted. We'll have a decision.